Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature Interview. Today I have not one, two guests, and you can find their film on Tubi, The Chips. I have the star director, Todd E. Braley. I have his great son, cinematographer, Jay Braley. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, welcome. Thanks a lot for having us. We really appreciate that you took the time to watch our film, and that's a big deal.
Well, I like when people tell me where to find things, so I'll tell you later how I found it, but we'll go into that
all
now.
Right. Awesome.
Let's start at the beginning. How big a poker fans are you guys? I mean, you don't get movies about poker that often in shorts.
I enjoy playing poker with friends. Usually don't do it for money. I'm a big fan of movies that have that stuff in it, you know, like, you know, the original Sting is kind of the first movie I ever saw that had a poker game in it. I'm a huge fan of Molly's Game, Rounders. What's the Kevin Spacey movie that, he had a bunch of kids playing poker anyway.
21?
Yeah, 21. There we go. You know, so I'm a fan of it of them that way. I always feel that if they're shot well and they're really kind of building the tension with the game itself, that kind of thing I enjoy. And like I said, I enjoy playing it. I won't play in Vegas because, well, I've done that and it sucks. And I've lost a lot.
I've literally only ever played poker once, and it was on an airplane on my way to Kansas City. And we literally played with, what was it, like guitar picks and drum tuners. That was the first time I ever learned how to play it, and that's the only time I ever played it, but it was fun.
Okay. Jay, we'll start off with you. Your film is in black and white, and you're the cinematography. So I don't know how many other films you shot. So how do you find it shoot differently in black and white as opposed to color?
You know, it was interesting. I mainly shoot music videos, and I've done like one or two black and white music videos, but this was definitely like the first thing I've shot where, you know, it wasn't a run and gun type deal, right? So we really had to take into account of contrast and also lighting, because, you know, especially with black and white, I feel like it really ups the contrast a bit. And so we really wanted to create this kind of crazy looking mood lighting, you know what I mean? And just like, not crazy looking, but more so like sinister without being too sinister. And, you know, I'm really happy with the way that it turned out. I mean, we had minimal lighting, you know, we had a couple of different lights that we got beforehand. We tested it out, and it, you know, it, what really made it very easy is the fact that we shot it all in one spot, you know, so we were able to control the lighting, and it was indoors. So we were able to control it for the entire thing. And, I'm really happy with how it turned out lighting wise and just with it being in black and white. I don't know. It just gives it a little bit more of like a moody feel to it. And I really enjoy working with black and white. It's a little bit, you'd think it would be a little bit easier than doing in color, but I actually found it to be a little bit more of a challenge, which I liked.
Fair enough.
So yeah. The whole black and white thing, I like the old school look, you know. I'm a huge fan of old black and white movies. And so when I told Jay that we were going to do this in black and white, and, you know, we really, like you said, we took into account the contrast of the room, which is why we were lucky that the people that own the building let us do pretty much whatever we wanted. And so we stuck those LED lights in some of the corners, not necessarily to brighten those up, but more or less to try to add some depth to the shots. So it was definitely a challenge. And then the LEDs themselves in the corners presented a challenge as well. So there was some issues that we had with that we had to really had to work on that I totally didn't even think about when we were getting ready to shoot. And when Jay, you know, we're looking and we're going, I'm looking at what our problem was, which was called banding. I won't get into the explanation, but it was just kind of one of those things that we looked and we went, oh, okay. So what do we need to do to fix that? And so Jay just did some like 2 minute homework and he goes, okay, figured it out. Let's go. So got it fixed and moved on.
Yep.
Yeah. Jay, you just said you came off music video. So you're shooting a film. Are they gotta be different.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's a lot more, obviously more planning that goes into it than it does with not necessarily more planning, but it's a much bigger project. You know, it's one thing to shoot a 3 minute music video and another thing to shoot a movie that's over an hour, you know? So definitely the shot list was a little bit, took a little bit longer to work on, you know, setting things up, rallying, you know, cast and crew. I really do enjoy both, but it was a bit of a challenge because when I worked on movies, typically I ran sound or, you know, just kind of helped out around set, the little helper. And doing this, I won't lie, it was a little scary going in, but, you know, once we got the ball rolling and everything, it became a little bit easier than I thought it was going to be. So, but I do enjoy shooting both very, very much.
Yeah, back to Todd. Where does the theory of poker come from? Who's talking about that? Is that your theory of poker?
The theory of poker?
Yes, it's right at the beginning of the film. It says, theory of poker. Oh, dying to know what's going on with that.
Yeah, that at the beginning, you know, it was funny because that was an afterthought, actually. It was kind of one of those things that when we were putting we got the movie put together and I felt like we kind of needed, not necessarily because I give audiences a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? I believe that the audience is way smarter than the studios like to think they are. We've all seen those movies where we went, okay, didn't need that much exposition. We're pretty good. But you know, unfortunately big studios like to think that the audience is stupid. And I don't necessarily agree with that in any way, shape or form, but I felt like we just needed some lead in, for the mood of the story. It was something that I really thought about after the fact. I was watching it and I liked, you know, how it started, where the flow and everything, but at the same time, it just felt like it was missing something at the beginning, which is why we went in and we did some additional writing. And I worked with my buddy Itai Guberman, who we've been working on a lot of projects writing together. We've got two feature films that we're doing this year, one in June, and Jay is going to be the cinematographer on that. It's called Where Do We Go From Here? And it's a drama. And then we're shooting a paranormal horror film in August called Shadows of the Night, which we're currently running an Indiegogo for. You know, it was just kind of one of those things that we looked at it and we just thought, you know what, we need a little bit more, just so people can kind of wrap their head around kind of the, not necessarily the theory of poker, but the theory of existence, you know, the theory of the drug addict, the theory of the alcoholic and the gambling addict. And, and that I don't think people, not everybody understands that. So that was the reasoning for that.
Okay, Jay, when you're setting up that four shot early, did you know it was going to be a four shot, or were you just told to do four separate shots?
I believe we had that planned, if I remember correctly. We that was one of the things we had talked about previously. And so, yeah, that was something we did, in fact, plan ahead on.
We never shot with less than three cameras at a time.
We gotta find that picture. We had like what, 10 different cameras going at the same time. I took a picture of the entire setup.
We only had 4 days to shoot that. And so the one thing that I said to Jay was, cause we had done a couple of projects in the past where Jay helped with sound and stuff like that. And when I asked him to be the cinematographer on this, I really wanted to not only challenge him, but also let the actors know that you don't get to half-ass your performance, because there's going to be a camera on every single one of you at the same time. I mean, that served a couple of purposes. Obviously, made shooting go a lot smoother and a lot quicker. But then at the same time, we were able to really get actual reactions. And there were some of those, and it made editing probably, even though Jay edited the movie as well, and he had never edited a film before.
Like a full length feature.
So because I just felt like it needed a younger person's eyeball when it came to the editing. And Jay does really well editing music videos. And when I asked him to do this, he was, what's the word you used?
Can we cuss on this show?
Of course.
I was slightly scared out of my ass. Like I was.
Dr. Koss's ass, you're good.
That was the first thing that came to mind, but I was fucking terrified. I was like,
that's once better.
When we got everything together, I was just sitting there. I remember looking at it and I was like, okay. All right, let's go. We got this. Okay, I got this. So, but no, it was a challenge and it was fun. And I mean, honestly, probably the easiest part for me to edit was the intro. Cause literally my dad was like, yo, edit it like you're editing a music video. I'm like, oh, all right. Yeah, no, I got you on that. That I know how to do. We'll do that. So, yeah, it was fun.
I want to go back up to the 10 camera coverage. This is fascinating to me.
I mean, get that picture up.
How much coverage do you have here? I mean, the room does not look that big. Maybe I'm missing something. Not. Maybe it's the way you position. How do you fit 10 cameras in here without overlapping shots?
That's a great question there, my friend. It was not easy. You talk about it, Dad. I'm going to try to find this picture.
I've been with a lot of my films, we have always shot at least three cameras.
I get three, but this is 10. Yeah.
Well, but I also learned from the movie The Mist, and I learned from the TV show The Shield. They sometimes would use up to 4 to 5 cameras at the same time. And I watched a lot of the behind the scenes stuff with The Shield to see how they did that. So they didn't have, you know, the crossing, you know, that the one camera was going to be in the way of the other. And so when we were setting these shots up, we literally shot almost everything on one side of the table first, shooting like towards the bar and towards the dealer and that. And then when we got pretty much everything we needed on that side of the table, and we always had cameras on the actors, but then we also, if there was going to be something that we needed to make sure that we saw with their hands, that we had other cameras on their hands. And then we also had a camera above the table for a good chunk of it. We didn't use a lot of those shots, but we had them. My feeling is if I'd rather have too much than not enough.
Oh, as far as footage
goes.
Of course.
yeah. And we had a lot of footage. We had a lot, but it was just a matter of setting them up. With the actors, you know, we had one at one end of the table, one of our actresses who played Gina. We had another one on Catherine, and then we had two going either over the shoulder or just pointing at Gio and wow, I can't believe I forgot her name. On Rose, who was the actress's name. So, and then we would have, you know, one overhead, and then we have one on their hands. And so it was just a matter of where we were shooting from. And then we'd go, okay, so where can we put these other ones to make sure? I mean, that only happened a couple of times because most of the time we had, it was three to four, but on that particular shot, because there was so much going on at that point, we just kind of felt like, you know what, we've got the cameras, set them up, and let's go.
Yeah, I'm not done with this yet, Jay. I want to go back to you. You have 10 different shots.
Dude.
10.
Yeah.
How do you choose which one you like? I mean, I'm sure you have four or five different shots of this film that I can watch, and they'd all be different.
Oh, yeah, so for
when
sure.
When you're editing, I mean, obviously you probably have two edits going, I'm guessing. One's done, you give it to dad, then you have a second one. Your dad says, nope, we're going to switch this to that to this. And I'm sure that happened numerous times with dad.
Oh, yeah.
But my basic is you have this much footage. Where do you start?
Honestly, here's the secret. You open up whatever editing software you're using. You put it all on there. And when it's all done, like pretty much uploading to it, you just kind of sit there and go, oh man, okay. Like literally I sat there and I probably stared at it for quite a long time going, oh, what did I do?
but when you were having trouble, I would say go to our shot list. Cause we made our shot list, and I always make my shot list on the script. I don't do a separate shot list. I write because a lot of directors, when they create a shot list, and cinematographers as well, they'll do it separately. But we put ours on the script itself. So, and I know when Jay put his stuff into the timeline, I think if you remember, he was telling me he would take everything from one take, put it all together, line up all of the audio, and then just kind of go with what is supposed to be the opening shot or which would be the next part of that scene, and go here and then cut and then drop down. And he knew that he had on this part of the timeline, he had one of the actresses, he had another actor, he had another actor, he had another actor. So he was able to line those up. And then, again, he would send stuff to me. He would edit for a day, send stuff to me, and I'd say, okay, do me a favor. And then I would look for the clip and go find this clip and stick this shot from this point to this point in it. So it was – it took a little bit of work, but it worked out. He did a hell of a job. I mean, we did not have – that many changes when he would send stuff to me.
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of changes at all.
Mm.
Your drone shots. Does these nice drone shots come from all your music videos?
Funny enough, the drone shots, those are actually, my dad did those. I've never flown a drone. I watched literally for a music video once, this dude had bought like a super duper cheap drone, and he decided that he wanted to test fly it that day. And he test, I said, I don't want to touch it until you play around with it. We went to the beach. He opened this thing up, turned it on. It started flying and it flew right into the ocean. And from there on out, I'm like, I don't think I ever want to fly a drone. So that was all my dad.
Yeah. The drones are scary. Drones are really, they're frightening just because you've got a lot of money flying, you know, 50 feet above you. And it just takes one little wrong move. And Jay and I are both very dyslexic.
Oh God. Yeah. Oh, no.
So that adds to the problem of flying these drones, because you're trying to look, you know, the guy that taught me how to fly him, he's like, you don't want to look at the drone. You want to look at the screen. But the problem is, you know, your dyslexic brain starts turning things around. And then the next thing you know, you're where you thought you were going left, you're actually going right, and you're going, oh shit, wait a minute. And then you're trying to stop it, for keep it from running into the tree. If you would have had video of me learning how to fly a drone, that would have been, you could have made a documentary in by itself of me trying to learn how to fly the damn drone.
Yep.
But yeah, okay. That was quick, and it was hard because it was so cold that night that we were trying to fly that thing, and it wouldn't take off because it was cold. And we had to take it inside the building and put it, because we took it right out of the back of my van, and it had been sitting out there for quite some time, and so we had to take it in the building and put it by the, it has hot water heat. So we had to put the batteries and everything by the heater and leave it there for like 20 minutes before it warmed up so we could even fly it. And even then it was like, took it out, took it up, got the shot with the car pulling in. And then, it starts giving me a warning that it was too cold. And so we got the shot, brought the drone down. Okay, that's it. We're good. That was a one taker, boy.
Literally though.
This may be Jay going down. Jay's the music. I gotta say, it's very different sounds throughout it. I think you go to very different genres. I couldn't even tell you what genre I'm listening to half the time. So is that all you?
Yeah. That was I what do I have? I have a Logic. And I put all that together and did a lot of like the keyboards and the guitars and stuff. And we were just kind of all over the place with it. And we had a lot of fun with it. It's funny you bring that up. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot I did the music for that.
Well, just with the exception of the songs that are in there.
Yeah.
The like songs were the old
like swing
1920s swing music. That was all we got lucky. That was all copyright free. So, I still put the credit to, the people in the end of the film, but, the score itself, all Jay.
Yeah. Well, we're finally going to get to my first location since there's only one really. Who found the building? I thought it looked like an actual poker room, but I know it's not.
Yeah, the building is actually used to be a nursery for a gym that is out in the Fruita area here where we live. I'm in Grand Junction, and Fruita is another town that's about 13 miles away, and that building had been used for a daycare. So when people went to work out at the gym, they could take their kids back there, go work out, and then pick their kids up and go. They had shut that down a few months prior, and we were able to go in there. The owner let us go in there, and probably, what was it? Did we do that the day before we started shooting? I think it was.
What, setting up all the lights?
Yeah, and everything? Getting everything set up.
Yeah. Yes.
So we went in there the day before, and we spent probably, I don't know, 5 hours putting everything up. And there were, it was funny, there were pictures on the walls that were behind, that were on the wall, the back wall over by where the bar was. And the pictures were not, they were like glued basically to the wall. So instead of trying to do something, and we couldn't do anything with the pictures because they were like workout pictures. And so we just, we bought the curtains and the curtain rods, and the owner let us drill holes. And so we just put those up like there were windows.
Yep.
And, so we covered those pictures up with the windows, and it were, and we had full rain. I mean, we went in there, you know, our first day of shooting was a Friday, was a Friday or a Thursday, Thursday. And we went in there Thursday night because we wanted to get all those exterior shots. So we shot a little bit of the opening when they first come in.
Mm-hmm.
And then, from there, then when it got dark, because we covered the windows up, we blacked the windows out. That big curtain that's behind two of our other players, that was actual, there was an actual window there, although we did buy more curtains and stuff to cover that up. But once it got dark, then we went outside and shot everybody arriving. So, but we got lucky with that location because we originally had another location, and 3 weeks before we started shooting, before we were going to shoot, we lost it. So we got lucky that that this other location popped up. So
okay, well, I just want to go back in a little bit of the set design area of expertise. So all the liquor you brought in is real liquor or stage liquor?
Staged.
Okay.
Yep.
Number two, whose poker table? Because it's a pretty nice poker table and chips and all that stuff. Where did all that come from?
Amazon.
Oh, the table's from Amazon. It's not like your table.
Nope. Mm-mm. No, I bought it. I bought it on Amazon for it was $120, and then it actually folds, so you can fold it up and put it away. But I didn't like the crease down the middle of the pad, so I literally took the whole thing apart, bought another pad that was actually for what they call a portable poker table. So it's literally, it's like wetsuit material. And so you could just roll it out on a regular table, and it's a poker table. So I bought that, tore the poker table apart, glued this new stuff on there, and fixed the underside of it so you couldn't fold it. And it's actually sitting in my shed right now. I've been trying to sell it. I was trying to sell that and all the poker chips and everything for, you know, $150, but everybody that says they want to buy it, I'm still waiting for them to bring me the money.
Oh, I thought they were showing up. That usually what happens.
So,
okay. How many of your actors could play poker?
After the movie,
talking walking in.
Walking in, the dealer.
Yeah, the dealer was good, but everybody else, I'm like, I don't think these... It was evident to me, but I play poker, so I would know what's going on, but I mean, I don't care in the movie. I don't expect... They're actors. Just prove you look like you know what you're doing. I'll accept it.
Well, we did. They looked... more seasoned in the movie than they were when we started rehearsing. We rehearsed a lot. And we spent the first night of rehearsal just playing poker. The guy that was teaching them, Sean Murphy, I just told him, I said, here's what we're going to do. You guys are going to play poker. You're going to listen to Sean, but you're going to play as your characters.
Oh.
So we have a lot of behind the scenes footage of them playing, learning how to play. And then by the time we got, you know, by the time we got to the movie, they were a hell of a lot more versed than they were when they originally started.
So us watching the film, I would say poker for the most part is a male activity. Not saying women don't play poker, I'm just saying, but in your film, you have more women than men. Was that a plan or just the way the casting worked?
That was actually the plan, because the actresses that we had in there were young people that I wanted to work with. Okay. I had seen them do other stuff, and I think a lot of people don't realize. I actually did a movie back in 1995 called The Gentleman's Wager, and I always felt like I could do something better doing something with a similar story. Even though I hate remakes, I felt like my remake was okay because nobody saw the original to speak of.
I'll give you that one. That's a fair remark. I will totally back you off on that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I kind of thought about, you know, what could I do differently that I didn't do originally? And because of the three actresses, the two blondes are actually sisters. And then Rose had been in You Like to Draw that we had done the previous year. And she's just a phenomenal actress. I just love her. And so I wanted to give her something to be able to be more than just, you know, the comic relief. And so I invited her, I initially wrote the chip for her and then brought in the other ones. I tried to get another female, but actors in Grand Junction are not in abundance. So, but we got Devante, and he actually had never done any acting before. And so I worked with him a lot to get him where he was. I think he did a really good job, and I feel if he hadn't been so nervous, he probably could have done an even better job. But he was always just really, he was always hoping, was that good? Was that good? Did I do okay? Was that good? It's like, dude, I said, I'm going to tell you what Hitchcock used to tell his people. If I'm not talking to you, you're doing fine.
Jay, was that your philosophy from the set? My dad's not talking to me. I'm doing okay.
Basically, yeah. Be like, nope, okay, all right, well, I guess we're good then.
Jay had a hard time. He's so used to being the only crew guy when he does his videos. He had to get used to the fact that he had six people helping him.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things that I would go, okay, we get together, him, and then he had a couple of camera operators. The guy, John Briner, who played the bodyguard or the
doorman.
The doorman, yeah. When he wasn't on camera, he was helping. or he was running a camera or doing something. But at the very beginning of the shoot, you know, Jay is, we're like, talked about the first shot. Okay, this is what we need to do. And okay, let's go. And so Jay's out. He didn't say anything to anybody. He just runs outside, goes and starts grabbing things. And I looked, and everybody's kind of standing there. And I looked, and I go, where's Jay? And he ran outside. And we were like, somebody go out and tell him that you're here to help.
I forget that that's an option. I'm so used to working alone and carrying 5-6 different things all by myself all the time. I forget that that's an option.
It took him about a half an hour to really get into the groove that he didn't, that he had a crew. He had a full freaking crew behind him. And so it was nice, though, because all I had to do was say, okay, so on this one, this is what we're going to do. Go into the script. And then I'd even say, you know, let's go ahead and add a camera or do this, that, or the other. And then all I had to do was turn around and then work with the actors, because I knew I could trust Jay and the rest of the guys to handle things. Well, guys and women, we had a great script supervisor, Sarah Holding, who kind of filled in at the last minute. The guy that was going to be our script supervisor, his mom got really sick. So Sarah jumped in and boom, took over. And then we had two people running sound. Lamario Smith was working on sound, and Jerry Main jumped in and was handling sound. And so it was kind of nice with the sound, though, too. I mean, we mic'd up. We put lavaliers. I have some of those Tascam recording lavaliers, so they're not transmitting. They're literally recording onto a mini SD card. And so we mic'd up Sean, who was the dealer. We mic'd up Rhonda, and we mic'd up the bartender, and we mic'd up the doorman. And then that way we just had the boom mics over the top of the table. We had one boom mic that was handling the two on this end of the table, and then we had another boom mic that was handling the other two at the other end of the table. And we never really had, we didn't have to do this. There wasn't a lot of this because everybody was mic'd up. So, you know, that was another way of streamlining things.
Don't worry, Jay. I have one last question for you. We're going to get there in 1 second. So don't worry. I haven't forgotten about you. You dress at one point. Is leaving the table a real poker rule? I've never heard this. Or did you write that in?
I wrote that in.
Okay, because I've never heard of that. I'm like, I'm going to have to ask, because I've never heard it all the years I've played poker.
No, originally, when the original script that was written was done back in the early 90s, was written by a 16-year-old kid that wrote The Gentleman's Wager. And he literally, he made up a game.
Oh, okay.
A card game, and he made up all the rules. So what I kind of did was we brought it, and just made it a Texas Hold'em game, because the game he had put together, it worked in the first one, but it wasn't going to work in this version of it. So, but the leaving the table thing and all that was just something that we thought would add a little bit to the, you know, our game, our rules kind of situation. So, it's not a poker thing, but it's definitely, you know, we also, I kind of stole a couple of the things from Casino Royale as well. So
those will work.
Yeah.
Okay, Jay, you're going to have to think. You did the editing, so I'm going to ask you a very specific. Shot with a jar on the counter. You know what I'm talking about?
Shot of the jar on the counter?
Yes. What is in the jar?
It's in the jar. Wait, I forgot. Wait, what?
You have a shot with a jar on a counter at one point. You definitely go in at it. What is in that jar? I couldn't figure out the black and white. That's my question.
Oh, dude, I'm coming up with a blank right now. I don't even remember.
Those were the we had rock. Those were the rocks with the candles in them.
Oh,
is that what it is? Okay. With the black and white, it was kind of hard for me to tell. So I'm not going to ask what that was.
Dude, you and me both. I totally forgot about that shot.
Yeah, that was another way of adding some light. And so we actually used these fake candles. Oop. Right there. So we had these kind of all over the place. And so we stuck, there's some smaller one. Well, in fact, I think I have the one of the ones from the movie.
Hey. Yes, that's it.
Yep.
That's what I wanted to know. CJ, I called you out in your editing.
I know. It's been long enough. It was all you there, buddy.
I gave it to you. I said,
You literally gave it to me on a platter, and I forgot what it was. I was like, wait, what's yours?
I just, it was the black and white. It's kind of hard for me to tell. So I said, I better ask what that was.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the next ones will be easy for you, Jay. I'll lob it in for you. I'm off to fun questions now, so you guys are out of luck. If you didn't listen to my show, you're going to get whatever I felt like talking about tonight. First time on the show, I need everybody's favorite film.
Jaws.
Jaws.
Good choice.
For me, it's probably The Goonies.
No, you're too young to see The Goonies.
No, I love The Goonies. Yeah, it's one of my favorites, honestly.
Me and your dad are going to be upset if they ever make Goonies too. We'll be like, no.
No one asked for it.
Please don't make that movie.
No.
I'm with you. One person you both would like to work with in the future?
Oh. You know, I have always wanted to work with Malcolm McDowell. I mean, I'm getting to work with Bill Oberst Jr., which is a big deal for me, on Shadows of the Night when we shoot that in August. But Malcolm McDowell is somebody I've always, ever since the first time I saw Clockwork Orange, and then everything, I've seen everything he's done after that, you know, time after time and all that. And I just really, I think he would just be a kick to work with.
Jay?
For me, it'd probably be Samuel L. Jackson. I don't know. Like, he just seems like he'd be really fun to work with. Like, I don't know how you'd get any work done. I feel like there'd just be a lot of laughing going on set.
Last question. Might be a little difficult, but you're going to have to think about it, Jay. I know this. Your dad will have an answer for sure. One film you always recommend to people that they've never seen?
Honestly?
Godfather.
People have not seen Godfather?
Dude, you would not believe how many people have not seen The Godfather.
Well, they're idiots. they claim they watch film and they're of our vintage and not seen Godfather. I mean, Jay hadn't seen it. I kind of give it to him. It's an old film. He probably didn't get to it yet, but it's on that list of things he'll get to.
It came out like 2009, so it's not like a super old movie or anything, but it's a movie called My Suicide, and I can't even tell you who did it. I could see his face, but anyways, it's a really, really good, like, kind of like first person, almost faux documentary style type of movie. And I don't know if I showed my dad it or not. I've seen it.
Yeah. I watched it.
It's just really fun. And it's got a really good cast in it, you know, especially for being like a lower budget film. And it's got like some cool animations here and there throughout the entire thing. And it's basically about this guy who just is in love with filmmaking and just shoots his everyday life, almost like a never ending vlog type of deal. Oof. And I don't know. It's just one that I really
It's also called Archie's Final Project.
That's what I found it as. Archie's Final Project. So I definitely will check it and see. There's something I haven't seen, which is impressive.
Yeah. It's really good.
Okay, guys, it's your big chance to pimp out all your stuff. So tell everybody what you want them to know.
Well, again, we've got our Indiegogo for Shadows of the Night going right now. So if you go to Indiegogo.com, type in Shadows of the Night, Unhinged Paranormal Horror, our thing will come up. We're still trying to raise some more cash for that. We're up almost up to 15 grand, but we're trying to get it. We're trying to get it up beyond 15 grand. We're on our second stretch goal. So anybody out there that wants to help us out, we'd appreciate it. We got a lot of cool perks. Go to the web, go to the Indiegogo site and check it out.
Yes, sir. Pretty much the same thing as that. And also just something I'm very proud of, a music video that I did for two friends of mine there. That song ended up on the first episode of the new show Gen V. It's called Body Talk by Diaria featuring Fran. And so if you guys ever want to check that out, it's a great song, great artists. And yeah, very proud of that.
Okay, Chips is available on Tubi, guys. The Chips, it's an hour and a bit. Come on, you got time to watch it. Thank you for your time, guys, and have a great evening.
Thanks. Appreciate you having us on.
Thank you.